Of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. who appears in his various eternal forms and walks on the surface of the world. I take shelter of him only because he can give me relief from all fear, and from him I have received this condition of life which is just befitting my impious activity. Report by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The word Chadanarabindam refers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead who actually walks or travels upon the surface of the world. For example, Lord Ramchandra actually walked on the surface of the world, and Lord Krishna also walked just like an ordinary man. The prayer is therefore offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who descends to the surface of this earth or any part of this universe for the protection of the pious and the destruction of the impious. It is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita that when there is an increase of irreligion and discrepancies arise in the real religious activities, the Supreme Lord comes to protect the pious and kill the impious. This verse indicates Lord Krishna. Another significant point in this verse is that the Lord comes, Ichaya, by his own will. As Krishna confirms in Bhagavad Gita, Sambhavamitmamayaya, I appear at my will by my internal potential power. He is not forced to come by the laws of material nature. It is stated here, Ichaya. He does not assume any form as the impersonalists think, because he comes at his own will and the form in which he descends is his eternal form. As the Supreme Lord puts the living entity into a condition of horrible existence, he can also deliver him. And therefore one should seek shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. Krishna demands, give up everything and surrender unto me. And it is also said in Bhagavad Gita that anyone who approaches him does not come back again to accept a form in material existence, but goes back to Godhead, back home, never to return. So I'll just read the translation again. The human soul says, I take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears in his various eternal forms and walks on the surface of the world. I take shelter of him only because he can give me relief from all fear, and from him I have received this condition of life, which is just befitting my impious activities. So, here is a very beautiful prayer by the Spirit Soul. And of course, this chapter is describing that some fortunate souls, when they're within the womb of the mother, they can actually remember their suffering in this world over hundreds of lifetimes, and at that time they think, oh, here we go again, and at this time they pray that, you know, so much horrible memories over many lifetimes, everything being destroyed again and again, including one's own body. So the fortunate spirit soul may be given that opportunity. It's about, you know, in the seventh month, and the living entity's consciousness develops, and he offers prayers. And these are the type of prayers. And of course, the essence of this prayer is that I'm praying to the Lord to give me relief. I'm very fearful. I'm again about to take birth and go through all my troubles again. I'm very fearful of that. I hope this can be the last time by the mercy of the Lord. He's the controller. He has put me here. So he is the one I pray to get me out. No one else. So that is the essence of the prayer. So in that prayer, we see the spirit soul has good spiritual intelligence and therefore has great faith and understanding of the personality of Godhead. So he describes that within his prayer. That comes out within that prayer, that he's taking shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, as described in this verse, the various reasons as we understand gradually. It is indicating Lord Krishna, he understands that Krishna appears in different forms, but it is Krishna. God is one. One Supreme Lord, he has different forms. And he is praying to the form of the Lord. That he has lotus feet. It's not metaphorical. He actually walks with them. He's not being poetic. He's describing and praying to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He actually has feet. He walks with them on the surface of the earth. So he is understanding correctly that he is remembering the personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, in his various pastimes, and he has full faith that that personality, Krishna, in any of his different forms, is the person to take shelter. Now, by doing that, he's excluding all the other persons who are not worthy of taking shelter. Now, generally, if we look into the spiritual teachings of India, which are known all over the world. All over the world, for thousands of years, people have accepted it. If you want spiritual understanding, you go to India and you get that spiritual understanding. You cannot get anywhere else. Very beautiful Sanskrit prayers with different Sanskrit words which describe the spiritual science, and many, many of those words are not even, they do not have a comparative word in other languages. Even the concept doesn't exist there. Why go to India? Because the concept, the word doesn't exist, and the concept doesn't exist even in the religious teachings around the world. So it's accepted. Spiritual teachings, if you investigate that, you will find that mostly it has been distorted. So 99% of people who study the ancient Indian spiritual teachings, which come from that they appear in India because Krishna appeared there, but they're not certainly not Indian, they're universal. Describe the eternal spiritual truths which is existing in all times and places. But generally this is what you will hear, and that is that people find it very difficult because they try to understand God with their material intelligence. So they think God cannot be a person who walks around like you and I. Because when I see people walking around like I am, I don't see that that person can. I don't see suns and moons coming out of their ears, and they just look like an ordinary person. How can that person actually be God? Especially, you know, why does God need to walk? He's everywhere. God is everywhere. Everything is God. So, why is it that God needs to walk? If he's walking to get from one place to another, he can't be God, because God is already everywhere. So it doesn't make sense. So people find it very hard with their material intelligence to understand that God can be a person. And have very human-like, what to speak of animal-like, eternal forms. So therefore they invent a material concept of God and place that over the top of the actual teachings of the Vedas. And that teaching is that basically God is impersonal. He cannot be personal. He's impersonal, and when we see the forms of God, such as Krishna and Rama, and, you know, they say, you know, me, I am God, you can become God. What that means is that the impersonal Brahman, unlimited spiritual energy, without form, without differentiation, that assumes a material form temporarily. So that form is not actually God, but that one Brahman, which is within all of us, we are all that one Brahman, it assumes different material forms. So therefore, the same Brahman which is in you is the same Brahman within me, within everyone. It is one Brahman, it is this Brahman without individuality. Therefore, you are God, I am God, everyone can be God. So we can nominate everyone as God. So, therefore, many false gods appear. Prabhupada says that, you know, in India you can find God like you always have on every corner, practically. So, therefore we have a lot of cheating God. So, what happens, of course, is that people who want to have some spiritual sentiment that will get me out of this fearful condition in material existence, they surrender to a person who is not God, but actually a human with the qualities of a dog. Because Prabhupada says that immediately someone says they are God, you can immediately understand that person is a dog. It's a very strong statement. Because, you know, it's misleading people. And in fact, you have to understand that that's their real position. And therefore, you have as much chance getting out of the material energy as you have crossing the ocean by catching the tail of a dog. Imagine that. You're not going to get very far. Probably just out past the breakers. And you'd be washed up lifeless on the beach. So that is the danger. So, now, if you take the greatest so-called scholars of the spiritual science, of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, none of them can understand God as a person. So we're talking about the most famous scholars, the most famous, you know, pundits. They write books and they give lectures. And, you know, the biggest ones in the world right now, all of them, none of them can understand that God is a person. They just cannot understand that. And yet, Krishna appears within one's understanding and intelligence by his own will. We cannot capture his adhoxygen. We cannot capture him with our intelligence and mind. He will only appear within our intelligence, our understanding, our consciousness fully by his own will. Just as we cannot expect, the sun, if we wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, we say, "Oh, it's really cold." Okay, I want the sun to come now. Not coming 2 hours later. I want the sun to come now. Cannot. The sun will rise of its own accord. There is no one who can make it come otherwise. So the sun will be the personality of Godhead, Ichaya. He appears by his own sweet will. There are many persons who imitate Krishna and his very exalted devotees, and sometimes because they imagine that they can be Krishna, and the ladies that they want to associate with can be Radharani and the gopis. So sometimes the men even dress up as the women. It's a very strange look. They have the moustaches and the coat. That's my wife. We were walking. I was showing Srimurti and Tessica the trees on the farm. It was just on dusk. And I'd lost my hat. So I put on my wife's shawl. And as I walked through the forest, I turned around and she took a photo. She said, "Oh, you look like a goat." Unshaven, have a closer look. She doesn't see very well either, unshaven. But they feel that they can dress up as Krishna, dress up as Gopi, and they ask, the gopis will ask, "Krishna, you come here dancing for me, arouse my spiritual sentiments," which is basically lust. You cannot do that. You cannot command Krishna to come, even by such imitation. In fact, especially by such imitation. So how do we understand that Krishna is active person? Actually, it's not that difficult. If Krishna himself reveals himself, you can understand very easily, even a little child. Or sometimes Krishna reveals himself through his devotees. Otherwise, by his will, he can reveal himself, and otherwise he is not understood, even by the greatest scholars, no matter how they study the scriptures or what have you. So we're very fortunate, of course, because we have heard from one of the greatest devotees of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada, so we're hearing his purports. And through that, something which is others cannot understand, thousands and thousands of years, great yogis cannot understand. Here we are, and we can understand just by hearing Srila Prabhupada's explanations. The children will not understand, everyone will understand. So Prabhupada gives some examples. Here, of course, the first thing to understand is that when he appears, he's not forced to come. He's not forced to appear. He comes of his own will. If he comes of his own will, that means he's not forced by karma. So why is he coming? Why is he coming by his own will? He comes, as he says, if there's a rise in their religion and discrepancies, actual religious practices, reduce, therefore the pious people begin to suffer, and impious people commit more sinful activities, then he will appear at that time for that transcendental purpose. You know, ultimately it's a transcendental purpose because what he's doing is arousing our Krishna consciousness, arousing God consciousness everywhere. When the Lord appears, he has a spiritual activity to arouse spiritual consciousness all over. So his activity is transcendental. Some of the religious principles may not necessarily be immediately spiritual practices, but they lead in that direction, and then the spiritual consciousness has fertile ground to develop. So he appears by his own will. We know that Krishna appears once in the day of Brahma. So there are in each day there are 14 Brahmas in one day. 14 Manus in one day of Brahma. Each Manu is for 71 cycles of the four yugas. They have millions and millions and millions of years. So once in that day, and that's after Brahma's night, which is the same duration Krishna appears, but he comes of his own will. So even though he appears on a particular schedule, he doesn't have to. But he does. And he comes for that purpose. So, when he appears, he's not forced to come by the material energy, and nor does he need the assistance of the material energy. So, these are the activities of the Supreme Spirit. So generally, in order to understand spirit, sometimes we have to look at the individual soul to see the capabilities of the individual spirit soul. And by seeing, because we are a spirit soul, so when we perceive our own spiritual qualities, it's not such a big step to see the qualities of the Supreme Spirit. We are a spirit soul within this body, and the spirit soul is considered to be 1/10,000th the size, the tip of a hair. So that little spiritual atom, it's eternal, the soul. It's so small, you cannot see it. They say a point has no width and height and what have you. But actually, if you look at it under the microscope, you see it does. It's just so small you can't see it. And the spirit soul is even smaller than that. It appears that it does have form. The energy coming from that soul, everything we do in this entire life comes from the energy of that soul, you imagine. You know, we buy a battery, we get batteries for our torch, you know, turn it on for a couple of days to go and get another battery, you know. They have big batteries in this world, but there's no batteries or anything. There's no source of power that equals the soul. And even if you take the greatest, huge, you know, species of life, that time of the spirit soul is there, and all the energy over its entire life is coming from that spirit soul. So you imagine the potency of the Supreme Spirit Soul. Even if we take material objects like the sun. So here, we have to understand three concepts. With a person, you can have a non-living entity, like a doll. So you have a doll. Basically, inside the doll, there's material energy. There's no consciousness. Spirit soul has consciousness. Outside, you know, the external part of the doll, it's also, there's no consciousness. So within, without, there's material energy, there's no consciousness. Then you take us, in the second category. Within, we're conscious. So there's something spiritual. That spiritual element, it's just, you can analyze all the other elements, it's not one of them. They're all no consciousness. This one is different from all the other elements in this world. It is conscious. Very unusual feature. Very, very, and it's that consciousness remains fixed. So, within consciousness, spirit, outside, external. Can we take God? Within spirit, externally, same spirit. There's no difference between within and without. See? So the three categories. So we take the example of the sun, which is, we'll consider, you know, the material object. Big fireball burning in the sky. So the sun is burning, giving off energy for what? Billions. Billions of years. Imagine a fire, you know, that just burns, you know, for 100 years. You know, I have a fireplace at home. Every morning I actually get up and light it again to clean up the house. Imagine you light it and it just burns right through winter. Burns through every winter. The sun burns for hundreds of years, thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years, hundreds of millions of years, billions of years. This keeps burning. How much power is there in a material object? I don't know. And the sun, it sits in one place, basically. You know, generally, it's, you know, we see it sitting, and we know it has some movement, but generally it's in one place, and throughout the entire universe, that different energies are coming. There is the energy of heat, there is the energy of light. So the sun is giving these wonderful, and of course when you analyze the different energies of the sun, there are many different energies which can be used in all sorts of different ways, and, you know, by scientists. So, a material object, we say that the Supreme Soul cannot even do what the sun is doing, which is a material object. And that doesn't make sense. So at least we have to say God can do something, you know, like the sun can do, at least. That means that if the sun can do something, it's not even a spirit soul. We see one spirit soul is so powerful. Prabhupada describes that once the spirit soul itself, although so tiny, is actually more powerful than millions and millions of suns. Because, you know, this spirit soul, in one body, it gives the energy, but it does that eternally. So for all our billions of lives in the material world, that same spirit soul is giving that energy. It lasts longer than the suns, it lasts longer than thousands of suns. And it lasts eternally. So the spirit soul has more energy than millions and millions of suns. And yet, we say that the Supreme Soul cannot even do what the sun is doing, which is material, or what the spirit soul is doing, which is a tiny little, little spiritual particle, eternal. So, of course, why shouldn't the Supreme be able to do what we see is done by the sun? Now, even if we take this example of the Lord walking. So, the sun has a similar movement that it also walks in effect, or moves step by step. Every day, the sun takes in its 360-degree circle, every day it takes one step. When it finishes 360 steps, that's 1 year. So of course we know that, you know, that's a, if you divide our year, 365.25 days by 360, you get each one of those steps. Yeah. So the sun is also taking steps, but generally it is situated in one, it's so high that really it's just situated in one place, and it's actually in one part of the universe and it's distributing. But when it takes a step, it makes significant adjustments to our weather. Somewhere is getting the nice, you know, beach weather, and somewhere's a little colder, like that. And for the world, where all the weather patterns are interrelated, so So we actually need, you know, heat in some part and cool in some part. It actually balances everything and keeps it. So the sun is perfectly keeping the ecology of this world, every living being, by its adjustments and changing seasons. The sun is, how powerful it is, it's 93 million miles away, according to the scientists. And when it makes these little adjustments, it's so powerful, even though it's 93 million miles away, we get the exact effect we require, which is very subtle. See? So something so powerful can be far, far away, and at the same time have an effect very near. And it's situated in one place, and at the same time it takes these sort of steps. But the Supreme Person of Godhead is similar. That he is situated in the spiritual sky. At the same time, when he appears, he can take different steps and go and visit different devotees. And therefore, increasing the spiritual intensity, you know, the spiritual sunshine within their lives. But the difference is, of course, because he's the personality of Godhead, when he walks to see some of his devotees, you'd expect something more than the sun, wouldn't you? For God, Supreme Spirit. So just like one time he wanted to see Bhagavashka and Shukadev, one was a king, one was a Brahmin. Which one was a Brahmin? Shukadev. Yeah. And he was with a whole lot of sages, Vyasadeva, Vipulsha, Bhagavatam, and so on. So he went to each place at the same time. And what's more, the thing that really gets me is that all of those sages were with him in each place as well. So he took them as well. So he took all those sages to see Shukadeva. At the same time, he's seeing Bhagavata with the same group of people. And, you know, similarly, when he used to walk out of, you know, his houses in Dwarka, his palaces, 16,108 palaces, living with each different queen that he married, and simultaneous weddings, as far as I understand, with all the relatives there as well, for the different weddings. And yet, from there, he'll go to the assembly house, and when he arrives there, just one Krishna walks in. So, we see there that there's no real limitation by the time or matter or space. He is the controller of time and matter, controller of time and space. So you'd expect that he can do that. Even we can do, you know, to some degree. Yogis, they can expand sometimes, be in one place, and expand to be in another place. Because these days we don't need to develop yogic powers because, as Prabhupada says, that material science has, you know, reproduced a lot of the yogic siddhis. You know, a yogi can, you know, they meditate and they immediately go from one place to another. We can hop in a plane, we can fly anywhere in the world. Can we fly? Yes, just like yogis. Yesterday, again, I was driving to one side of the bay, and my wife was on the other side of the bay. So we were talking, we were discussing some Krishna consciousness philosophy. So the conversation went on for a while. So probably went on for about an hour. And I'm driving in the opposite direction to where she is. And she said, you know, I'm taking you everywhere I'm going. I've been to the petrol station, I've been to the supermarket, I'm just going here. And you're with me, you know, everywhere I'm going. I'm thinking, gee, you know, that's a mystic city. But, you know, I said to her, just see how, you know, the mystic cities have been, you know, reproduced in one sense by material science, that we can do what, you know, only a yogi could do. But if we can do something, you know, if I can, you know, be on one side of the bay and at the same time be present with my wife, at least in sound vibration, certainly making them laugh and, you know, sometimes cry. But why can't the Supreme Lord do something, you know, as the Supreme Spirit? You know, we can do these things to some degree. What, you know, then how is it such a stretch that he can also be a person and do things which appear to be inconceivable? Oh, no one can be in one place, you know, another place at the same time. Well, I did it yesterday. You know, to some degree. Nowhere near as much as, you know, Krishna. Near as much as personalities like Narada Muni. So, again, we know that, you know, when Krishna walks, he also walks. You know, when we walk because if we don't walk, we won't get anywhere. So Krishna walks, but he can also jump. It's like there's a Jarasandha chased him, and Krishna and Balaram ran to the top of the mountain. Apparently in fear, oh, you know, Jarasandha will kill us, we're so... They were having fun. And they got to the top of the mountain, and was it Jarasandha?
Yes.
Yeah, and he set it on fire. And so they jumped off the mountain, 80 miles, to where they wanted to go. So he can walk, but he can also jump 80 miles. It would be from here to the farm. That would be good. So, why does Krishna walk? He's the personality of Godhead. Why doesn't he everywhere he goes, he's in jumping? Bong, bong. Because he purposely conceals his unlimited powers and opulence in order to reciprocate loving dealings with his devotees. Because the presence of his unlimited power, even a little spark of that unlimited, even a little portion of it, is so overwhelming that it can stunt one's loving affection. So we see with Arjuna that, you know, just to show that, you know, he's not an ordinary person, you please show your universal form. So he showed his universal form, and Arjuna was terrified, even though he knew this is coming from Krishna. But that power, you know, it's just like if you stand, you know, if there's a cyclone coming, and you stand there, that, and you see, you know, just houses being ripped up and smashed to pieces, and cows spinning around in the air, you know, it's a very fearful situation. The power Krishna was showing was not like a little tornado on this planet. It was like the power of the sun and the moon, you know, massive powers, and the various planets, and, you know, the universal powers. A very, very fearful situation. So then Arjuna, he starts apologizing. Oh, Krishna, I've been treating you like an ordinary person, sitting on the bed, joking with you. You know, being very casual, you know, just sitting in the same place, and then he's apologizing. So then, you know, he asked to see again Krishna's form. And Krishna showed him his Vishnu form, the Narayana form, the personality of Godhead, who, you know, manifests his unlimited opulences. And then again he showed his form as Krishna. And in that form of Krishna, those friendly relationships between Arjuna and Krishna were possible. Otherwise, and therefore, you know, when Mother Yashoda loves Krishna so much that she literally, you know, wants to, you know, look after him, you know, then he appears like a helpless child to reciprocate that loving sentiment. So Krishna, he manifests pastimes by which they're very conducive to allowing us to treat him as a person. Let's put aside that I'm God. Put that aside. So much so, I'll put it aside so much, you'll forget that I'm God. You're just thinking I'm your friend. So Krishna, by his arrangements and energy, he can make those. You know, it's like Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a place where the gopis want to love him. So you have the beautiful moonlit forests of Vrindavan on the Jamuna River. How romantic. Very nice in the middle of night. People criticize Krishna that, you know, they can't understand. Another reason they can't understand that Krishna is God is because he appears to be very sinful. But actually, because he's the absolute truth, there's no differentiation between piety and impiety. Everything he does is all good. There's no dualities. You know, there's one thing and another. He is everything. Because he's everything, there's no, you cannot distinguish between he is pious. No, he's also impious. At the same time. We had a discussion the other day. Yeah, partiality and impartiality. I won't go into it again. But so, you know, this question was asked by Parikit Maharaj, and he, Sukadeva Goswami, answers this question that, you know, how is a Krishna can, you know, he's dancing with other people's wives and young girls, you know, in the middle of the night. This is very sinful, very impious. How can, you know, this be when he's the personality of Godhead? And Sukadeva Goswami explains that, you know, because he is the personality of Godhead, he is so powerful, he is the supreme controller, that there is no possibility of being affected in any way by any contaminated activities whereby one may get a material reaction. So again, if we take the example of the sun, even the sun has this power to some degree. That the sun can draw up the water from the urinal, where people have passed water and what have you in the fields. The sun does not become contaminated at all. In fact, it purifies those places. It's so powerful that it purifies those places, even though it is drawing from contaminated substances. But it's just so powerful. There's no question. So Krishna is like that. He's so powerful as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's no question that he can be affected by any reaction when he's in control of everything. Time, material energy, spiritual energy. So, but actually, because he's the absolute truth, actually when he dances with the gopis, they are in fact manifestations and expansions of his own internal spiritual potency, Hare. We say Hare, the Lord has a spiritual potency. And the Lord reciprocates with his own spiritual potency in eternal loving pastimes. There's nothing sinful about him associating with his own spiritual energy, even though it takes different forms. And the spiritual energy takes the forms of, you know, married or unmarried gopis. It's just to increase the different flavors of love. But there's nothing certainly sinful about that. It is the absolute truth. So, in this prayer, the essence of this prayer, that, dear Lord, you take me out, you descend. Although you descend and kill the demons, you can smash them by tidal waves and meteors and what have you. Really, you're descending to look after your devotees. And that means you are allowing them to take part in your blissful spiritual pastimes and to arouse their spiritual consciousness, their Krishna consciousness. You please take me out of this dangerous material energy and you place me in under the shelter of your spiritual energy. And that's what we say. So we say the same prayer as this spirit soul. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. O Krishna, you are all attractive. You have unlimited spiritual qualities and potencies which are all attractive. You are Rama. You give pleasure to those who take shelter of you. And you give them protection under your spiritual energy, Hare. Please, dear Lord, give me shelter under your spiritual energy. Free me from the grip of the material energy and allow me to enjoy these pastimes as your eternal servant. So we say the same prayer as this spirit soul, as Radha Krishna. In fact, if you take all the prayers, you know, it's the essence of it there is in the Hare Krishna mantra. So, I'll leave it there if anyone has any questions or comments.
So, how do we understand this spirit soul being able to offer prayer without developed consciousness? Like, is it still in the mother's womb? He said that in 7th man consciousness develops.
Mm-hmm.
But is able to offer like such wonderful prayers? Do you see that it's like from the past life, from piety? Or?
Mm-hmm. Well, these descriptions help us to understand that the Supreme Lord, within the midst of any of our, whatever circumstance we find ourselves in the material world, if we have that, you know, just realization that I've been very much humbled to be put into this embarrassing situation. If there is a God, please help me. And then He may help you to remember, yes, remember me from your past lives. There is no material impediment. Therefore, you know, when Srila Prabhupada left India to come to the West, you know, previously his godbrothers were sent by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and they went to England. And they were trying to help people, arouse people's Krishna consciousness as a representative of Krishna. But they came back and they said, oh, Krishna consciousness would not take place in England. That was, you know, a material concept. Because they asked, you know, different people, and they cited even, you know, a very pious person, the Marquis of Zetland or something, you know. Can you make me a Brahmana, he said. Yes, yes. So what do I have to do? No intoxication, no sex, no gambling, eating. Impossible. And so they went back. They said, you know, we cannot. The Prabhupada understood that Krishna consciousness does not depend upon anyone's material situation. If the spirit soul is eager, sincerely, not that one to, you know, have some cheating process and go on enjoying, they're saying, what I'm trying to enjoy and it's just suffering. I don't want to be cheated like this again and again. I really want to get out of it. If they have that sort of mood, Krishna will reveal himself to them. Can be through the Hare Krishna mantra, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is not different from Krishna, Archimedes, which is not different from Krishna, the devotee, which is the full direct manifestation of Krishna in the form of his representative. Krishna will reveal himself. Therefore, Prabhupada, he went into New York in the some of the most degraded places on earth. But he understood there's no material impediment. So I'm saying, you're going to New York to spread this Krishna consciousness? No, it failed in England. You're not going to happen. But he understood. If the soul desires Krishna consciousness, not to be cheated by some guru and pretend to be spiritual and go on with nonsense. If they sincerely desire that, in any situation, Krishna will reveal himself to that person gradually, as their faith and sincerity increases. Even within the womb of a child, of the mother. So that gives us great hope. We sometimes think, oh, Krishna consciousness, will I ever become Krishna conscious? There's so many impediments. What impediments? Prabhupada says if there's impediments in our Krishna consciousness, it's because we have some material motive. So if there's no material motives, there'd be no impediments. If we have material motives, then we're associated with material energy which is full of impediments. Even, plus some spirituality. But when there's no motive, Krishna, please, I'm suffering. My pride is completely humbled. I'm embarrassed to be in this situation. I'm embarrassed to be in this body. Please, let this be the last life. Or no more. I'm not asking you for anything. Just let me again be your eternal servant. Then there's no impediment, even within the womb of God. He's a spirit soul. He's not an embryo, he's a spirit soul. Any other question or comment?
Who, as you said, that Krishna is very powerful. Can you tell me that Krishna is it bigger than a religion? Because the war of Mahabharata was fought only because to spread dharma and to eradicate a dharma. Is Krishna bigger than a dharma?
Is Krishna bigger than
a dharma, a religion?
Is he bigger than a dharma? Good question.
Please repeat the question.
That brother Kurukshetra was fought to eradicate a dharma, the religion, and to establish dharma, a religious principle. Yes, everything is the personality of Godhead, and he is unlimited. Unlimited means that he's bigger than everything, even himself, because he's unlimited. His purpose is always expanding, so he's bigger than himself. There's nothing bigger than the unlimited. But he is the unlimited, he's the person I've got it. But, it's difficult to understand that because his eternal form is like very human-like. So, but that's why we find it difficult to understand that he's bigger than, irreligion. And, irreligion is really the in the universal form, we might say that religious principles are the front side of the personality of Godhead, and when he turns his back, there is irreligion is the back side, the other side. So everything is God. He is doing everything of his own accord, and everything is God. Irreligion is not something separate from God. Irreligion is, just like there is the sunshine and there is the darkness. Actually, the darkness is also created by the sun. the shadow. But no matter where the shadow falls, it never covers the sun. Because it is, in one sense, a creation of the sun, you know, light and darkness. So in the absence of light, there is darkness. But it, that darkness never covers the sun. And the same in the absence of religion, there is religion, but that never covers Krishna. It is a manifestation of his energies. Yeah. All right, I'll leave it there.